Hey, this is Matt Lesher. I play Eobard Thawne on CW's The Flash, and this is the Central City Underground.
Run, Barry. Run.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Central City Underground. I'm one of your co-hosts, Tony Caselli.
And I'm Joe Zettelmeyer.
And this is the show where we talk about
The Flash.
Hey, that almost was harmonized.
Yeah, close.
Thanks to you.
Accidentally. We didn't practice that.
I could not carry a note if you put big handles on it. Sad but true. Welcome back, everybody.
Yeah, but you sing with gusto.
I got Grant gusto. So, it's a great start already. Hey, everybody, this is Central City Underground. Here, we love to talk about our favorite comic book superhero show, The Flash. This is Central City Underground, episode 85, Joe.
And it doesn't look a day over 60.
Oh, you. We are talking about season 3, episode 17, Duet. This fabulous musical crossover with Supergirl aired on March 21st, 2017. And Joe, quick thoughts?
Oh my God, my heart.
So you hated it.
Loved it. The charm, the unapologetic weirdness.
Right? It was. I'll tell you what, in a season that has been had its ups and downs, but also been a little on the heavy dour side, right?
Yes, total agreement.
This was like a whole afternoon of spring air wafting through the woods and cheering everyone up.
The hills are alive with the sound of the Flash.
Oh, very true. I had a pretty solid reaction to this one as well, Joe. So let's talk about a little bit of news about this episode, shall we?
Shall we?
Well, first, nuts and bolts stuff, I guess, really. This episode was written by some of our most familiar names on this show. The story was by Greg Berlanti and Andrew Kreisberg. You may have heard of them. They've made the show. Executive producers, creators of all things Flashy on the CW. As well as most things Arrow-y, Supergirl-y, and Legends of Tomorrow-y on the CW. They wrote the story, and then the teleplay was by our favorite brother writing duo, Aaron and Todd Helbing.
The Helbings!
Who, of course, have some money named after them on Earth 19.
And we love them for that.
I don't think I will ever not bring that up, because it makes me laugh.
Every time.
I just want to be able to say, oh, I got a pocket full of Helbings here. Pick yourself up something pretty. Joe, this episode was also, it was directed by Dermot Daniel Downs, another well-known name to the Flash series.
Indeed.
This was his eighth episode that he's directed, including wonderful episodes like Grodd Lives, Attack on Central City, Invasion. And, yeah, I have to say, I really liked the direction of this episode.
Oh, man, it was just rock solid.
Yeah, we can, and I've got that in my talking points, and we can hit that when we get into discussion things. But so much fun stuff. This episode was better in ratings than the last couple of episodes, Joe.
Indeed it was.
It was at a 2.7 million before the after, you know, the time-shifted viewings. And, yeah, that's a little hope, you know, that the ratings are going to come back up. It's interesting that the ratings are down a little bit this season.
Maybe it is that dourness of which you spoke.
Yeah, it might be, because that was one thing that The Flash really embraced in season one was that lightheartedness of Barry Allen and Wally West, right? That lightheartedness of The Flash. And this season has been a little bit about the future sucks and everything's awful and who's going to die next.
Right.
And so, yeah, that puts a tone on it that's a little different. But that sort of takes us to one of the next pieces of news that we have, Joe.
News on.
Which is, this week, I think it was this week, the producers announced that next season's main villain is not going to be a speedster.
At long last.
Right.
I'd believe them more if they hadn't told us that Mirror Master was going to show up in season two and didn't.
Yeah.
But yes, no, with great relief, they have announced that the villain will not be a speedster this time.
Yeah. So who do you think it's going to be?
You know, I'm going to keep saying it till it comes true. The Rogues.
Yeah, I think that would be pretty great.
Yep.
And they, I mean, all right, spoilers for some other shows that have been happening on the CW in this universe, if you're not caught up, right? So I'm now going to talk about things that have happened on Arrow or Legends of Tomorrow or whatever that have happened up to this point in the season. So if you don't want to, if you're not caught up on those, put your fingers in your ears and hum for like 60 seconds. So Joe, Captain Cold is back alive now.
Right? And Heatwave seems to be back on his side.
Yes. So, you know, we haven't talked much about Legends of Tomorrow because there's a podcast about that now. And the show is really pretty fun this season.
Oh my gosh. So good.
But those two guys seemingly are knee deep in with the Legion of Doom right now.
Yep.
And so who knows, but it's got Legion of Doom and possible Rogues and Heatwave and Captain Cold, you know, written all over it. If we're not doing a big speedster villain next season, I think that would be pretty cool.
I agree.
Yeah. 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 Okay, great. So, Joe, the other little bit of news that I have is, not too spoilery stuff because they've released synopses and things for the next couple episodes. The next one is Abracadabra. Which deals with more or less a magician from the future, right?
Yes, from the 64th century,
something,
I believe.
Something ridiculously far away. Yeah. Where you're like, somebody, they just went nuts when they were writing this comic book, right?
Right, right.
The 60, why is he not just a ball of energy at that point?
Right.
I assume by the time we hit at least the 50th century, we're all just going to be floating spheres of thought, right?
Right, or little tiny beings with giant brains.
Yeah. And 64th century, why is he still living on Earth? Cut it out.
That's why he's got white hair. It's a future thing. You wouldn't understand.
Yeah, that must be what it is. But the episode after that, Joe, the title of that episode has been released as well as
the
synopsis. And the title is The Once and Future Flash. I think that's pretty exciting.
Yes.
The idea of it. Now, for those who don't know, the Once and Future Flash, not only that clearly implies some things with our Barry Allen and our show, right? But it's also the title of a comic story by Mark Waid. And in that comic story, it's about the Reverse Flash.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
So chances are very good that they're going to mix this up and blend it with Savitar the same way they've been blending things since the start of the series, right?
Yeah.
But in that comic story, Wally West is the Flash. Barry Allen has been dead for a long time and then returns and is not acting like himself. And he starts to do bad things. And then it turns out that Barry Allen is not really Barry Allen. It's Reverse Flash in disguise.
That's what I'm telling you. Savitar is Barry Allen.
I think it is too. But and there's been much discussion about that here, obviously. But so it's interesting how they're going to blend those two worlds. I can't wait. But it also means that, and help me if I'm wrong about this, but I think this is the first time that Barry is going to visit the future.
To visit the far future.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. In the synopsis for The Once and Future Flash, it says Barry visits the future to find out what he needs to know, basically.
Yeah.
And so I'm excited about that because we've seen him go back to the past a bunch. We've seen him go visit, you know, his mother's death and go back and change things and blah, blah, blah.
Wait, when did he do that? Every other episode.
Right. What time is it? So I'm excited about what's coming up in the next couple episodes.
Yes.
Yeah.
I have a bit of news that I wanted to share as well because I thought it was cool.
Oh.
Regarding this week's episode.
Please do.
The new song in this episode, Running Home to You, mm-hmm. one of actually a couple new songs in this episode, was written by none other than Benji Pasek and Justin Paul, who just won an Academy Award for Best Original Song for City of Stars in La La Land.
Dun, dun, dun.
Right? They got some big pedigree folks to come in and write that absolutely gorgeous, heartbreaking song at the end of the episode.
Where he proposes to Iris.
Oh, my heart.
Along with that, Joe, fun information, is that the song Super Friend, the other original song, was co-written by the star of Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, Rachel Bloom.
Look at that.
So a lot of fun collaboration and people being pulled in for this episode.
There's a part of me now that's like, if I know we get a Gorilla Grodd episode every season, can we get a musical episode every season?
Well, I'm loving the, you know, a Gorilla Grodd episode every season, maybe getting a crossover of things. I've said before, I hope we go into Speed Force once a season because I think the idea is cool and I love the continued exploration of it. I don't know if they'll do a musical episode every season. But every once in a while, like every couple seasons, who knows, maybe we'll get a couple more before the series is done. Because, come on, it was so fun.
So charming.
I mean, it just was. So, all right, let's, Joe, should we, you know, there's a couple different ways to do this one. It doesn't really fit in a giant way with the continuity of the rest of the season. I mean, it does. Nope. It happened in continuity, but it doesn't drive a lot of the plots forward.
Nope.
Should we whip through it chronologically?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. We can absolutely do that.
Why don't we? And then we can just stop and hit talking points as we go.
I love it.
So, beginning of the episode,
Tony, before we start talking about the episode, we haven't given our ratings.
Oh, Joe, what's your rating?
I gave this episode a solid 9.5, one of my highest ratings ever. A 9.5 easy rhymes.
Easy rhymes? Nice. I also gave this 9.5 my two dads. Yes.
You got a problem with that?
No, I like musicals. Come on. So much fun. I mean, how good were all of Jesse, L. Martin, Victor Garber, and John Barrowman together in that dad's number?
My God, it provoked me to say something I thought I'd never say in the history of theater or television. I wish there were more songs.
Right. It's true. So we start this episode, Joe, with a little flashback. We get to see Mom Allen again. Yay.
Oh, Mama.
Nora's there. And little Barry is sitting watching TV. They're watching a musical. They're watching Singing in the Rain.
Singing in the Rain.
And Mom kind of says, musicals make everything better. You know, it's just
they
a sweet little flashback. And then it turns out Barry's napping on Cisco's couch because for the last couple of weeks he's been laying there watching musicals.
Right?
Which is actually really funny.
Well, and I want to kind of do a little side parallel story too. For those of you who watch Supergirl, what was Supergirl doing at the beginning of her episode this week?
She might have been watching a movie, Joe.
She was watching a musical with her boyfriend, Mon-El.
Right? And in fact, I loved in the episode when she brought it up. Follow the Ellerick Road? No. Follow the script. What?
So we established that our two heroes are already big fans of musicals.
Yes. And, you know, just on a sort of stepping back thing, it's funny too because they, last week everybody was like, why would Barry reject his relationship with Iris?
Oh man, that angered so many of us.
Sure. And I think now we go, oh, because they needed to be able to fix it in this episode.
They sure did.
Like that, so there's still a part of me that wants to just go punch somebody and go, cut it out. But this episode was a delightful way of setting those relationships back on track. And hopefully that romance stuff can be done and we can move forward.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
Yes.
So anyway, the guys are in Cisco's and HR pages them because a breach has opened. And as we saw in the last little bit of the Supergirl episode, Supergirl was whammied by a prisoner that walked into Why am I
the DEO?
Thank you. I'm like, why am I forgetting the name of their place? That walked into the DEO. Do you want to talk about that for a minute?
Well, it's an interesting moment, right? We don't see this dude get captured, but he is, like, they're bringing him in chains. And as soon as he sees Supergirl, his eyes do the little whammy whammy, and she passes out. And he grabs her, or no, he opens a breach himself somehow. We don't know how he does this.
Yeah,
he uses the device.
Yeah, because Wynn has just created a device, or is looking at the device that Cisco has made to make the breach, right? And Wynn is saying something cute like, I think this Cisco guy and I could get along, blah, 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 you know. And so he's got a device to open a breach, so now we can get easily back and forth from Central City to National City.
And so Music Meister, having whammied Supergirl, this perfectly coiffed villain, grabs the device and says he's got to go find the fastest man alive and jumps through the breach.
Right. It was such an odd, great ending because you went, wait, what? Who the heck is this guy? And Joe, talking point number one, we never really find out who the heck this guy is.
I think you and I, Tony, I think we both know exactly who he is.
All he was missing was the scepter of befuddlement.
It was a plot device. It was 100% plot device.
He practically screamed, "Explain nothing!" as he disappeared through the breach.
There was a distinct moment where I was watching the episode and thought, are the writers listening to our podcast?
Listen, if they are, you know we love you, and we complain because we love.
Right? And honestly, thank you for casting Darren Criss as the villain that we made up ourselves.
Yeah. You know, the thing about this villain, Joe, is in some ways he sort of reminded me of, pardon my nerding, Q, or even, going old school, Trelane from Star Trek.
I know, and with the musical aspect, I can totally see Trelane. God, we're nerds. But, like, for me, my suspicion would have been if Supergirl had not introduced this character already, I would have sworn it was Mixleplick.
Totally. Absolutely. Yep.
Right?
She even said at one point in the episode, I think, it was something like, I'm getting really tired of magical people or magical villains or whatever it was.
Right, right,
it
exactly.
It was clearly driven by her recent Mixleplick experience, right?
Well, and one of them even asked if he's from another dimension. It's like, yeah, that's what we're all thinking. He's a fifth dimensional imp.
But, so anyway, this guy we don't know has done this thing and gone through a breach and wound up somewhere in Central City. Then the team from the DEO follows through there and goes to Star Labs to say, hey, Supergirl's unconscious. We need your help. Right?
Right. And I was happy to see this time it was John and Mon-El who, you know, were not in parallel or in our Earth before.
Right. And that also set up one of those awesome moments that you get in comic books sometimes that are so fun for the fans, because later in the episode, we got to see Martian Manhunter and Vibe and Kid Flash team up to take down a villain. You go, what? When does that happen?
In my heart.
There was so much of this episode that I just went, that's fun.
You know? So good.
So anyway, they get there, and as they're discussing what's happened to her and they're trying to figure it out, Cisco sees on the security cam that Music Meister is there.
Yes, another breach has opened, and out of which comes Music Meister.
Yeah. So Barry and Wally speed in to deal with him. And we have to talk about this, because this is one of the couple of moments where continuity was really embraced.
Yep.
HR and Wally have a little get back on the horse kid moment.
Right.
Which I thought was really useful to have, right?
Well, you know, Wally's still a little shaky, and even Music Meister seems to know this.
He seems to know everything.
He sure does.
And again, how? What? I don't
If you're waiting for an explanation, you're going to be waiting for a long time.
Yeah, and that's sort of why it felt like Q to me. And from Star Trek, who's this omnipotent, omnipresent, all-powerful, you know, ridiculously overpowered villain, right?
And also just sort of an infant, right? Like, he's incredibly powerful, he's supremely intelligent, and has the emotional maturity of a 5-year-old.
Right. And semi-unclear motives. Like, at one point, he was trying to rob from a bank. Why was he doing that?
No idea.
He was sort of stealing their powers while they were unconscious, because then he had super strength and some super speed and some heat vision to open a bank door. But he seemed like he let himself get caught kind of easily.
Question mark?
Right.
And, unclear.
And why does he want this money? He was there for love. He's got to be. Yeah. What the heck? But it feels like the kind of person who, again, this is a character like Grodd that can come back once a season.
Right.
Or like Mixleplick that could come back once in a while and go, I can do anything. I'm just going to mess with you. I'm here to help. And now I got to go. Bye.
Right.
Right. To give us that sort of, oh, come on, this is crazy moment.
Maybe he's Batmite.
That was always this wonderful character in the comics. I loved it. So anyway, Barry gets zapped.
He gets whammied.
And he wakes up and finds himself in this dream place that he and Kara are now sharing. They've created this place out of their subconscious, right? And they're, from that, it's populated with people like from their worlds, just like in The Wizard of Oz. Mm-hmm. People are singing and dancing, just like in Singing in the Rain. It's set a little back in, you know, earlier days. It's got, and I have to interrupt now because that was one of the other things on my notes was, I just thought the production design of this episode was gorgeous.
Beautiful.
I mean, the scenery, the costumes, the whole thing was really pretty, right?
Well, and I have to admit, one of the things I loved is, you know, I know that everyone knows that Grant Gustin and Melissa Benoist were both in Glee.
Yeah.
And I was not a Glee watcher, that it was just not my thing.
Sure.
And so I've never actually heard them really sing outside of Barry doing karaoke.
Yes.
And I was so, you know, Barry wakes up and we just hear that Moon River.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my God, their voices are so good.
Yeah. And they work really well together. I mean, the chemistry of those two actors has been talked about a bunch before.
Oh, yeah.
This episode was full of that.
So good. The singing, the dancing. My heart. The only one of them, the only two of them I'd ever heard sing before were Jesse L. Martin and Victor Garber from various musicals.
Sure. Yeah. Two veteran musical theater professionals.
Indeed.
And I've seen on YouTube Carlos Valdez, who
yes.
U of M Michigan guy. Woo.
What?
He's got at least one music video out there.
Well, and he was in the musical tour of Once, right?
Was it Once? I don't even know.
I believe it was Once.
Excellent. Yeah, and so, you know, you got people with pedigrees who can do it, and so it was fun to hear them. But then we find ourselves in this bar, and the whole setup begins, right? As Kara is singing this beautiful song, she sees Barry, and the two of them get together and start trying to figure out what they're doing. And then all of a sudden, they start running into people from their lives and putting it together, going, okay, wait a minute, that's Malcolm Merlyn. It's who?
Right.
He's the League of Assassins. He's what now?
Right. Piano player Wynn and, you know, Bar Hop Cisco.
Yeah. The waiter with a heart of gold who's got the dreams of making it big, you know.
He's going to be big here, kid. See, he's going to be huge.
And then Music Meister shows up, and we keep saying that, but there's a talking point here too, Joe, again, about the Music Meister, which is, he did not give himself that name.
No, Barry did. He never refers to himself by any name.
No, Barry did way late in the episode.
Which is why I secretly suspect he's the Phantom Stranger.
What?
Right? The least likely of DC's omnipotent beings.
Exactly. For him to be. He just out of nowhere. I do this on the side sometimes. It's fun.
Right. Why does he have a fedora and trench coat?
But I thought it was cool because this Music Meister is very different than the one that was introduced in the animated
cartoon
series.
Yeah.
Right? Because that guy's power really was singing and sort of enchanting people, right, via music. And this guy had nothing to do with music, really.
Nope, except for a love of it.
Well, and it, all of the music stuff came from Barry and Kara's subconscious.
Yep, he explains very early on, this could have been a crime movie or science fiction, but no, because of where their heads and hearts were, it's a musical. Right. They made it happen, not him.
Exactly. He did this thing to put them in this, you know, combined dream state so that he could create this little crisis to teach them all the power of love and maybe try and steal some money, but maybe not, because... unclear, right?
Unclear.
So I just thought that was interesting that we gave him the name Music Meister, and if he comes back later, you know,
he could be something else entirely.
Right? Sci-fi movie Meister. Well, what's going to happen?
I would watch the heck out of that episode.
That would actually suck, though. Could you imagine? Instead of getting in the cute, sweet, tap dancey things, you're like running from the Terminator monsters.
Right.
My dreams suck!
An alien jumps out of Cisco's chest.
Right. By the way, if you die here, you're going to zap. Oh.
Oh.
Never mind.
Which is an important rule that they establish in this episode, is if you die in the fantasy, you die in real life.
That's right. So what happens next is what? Oh!
The song, the first big group number.
Put a little love in your heart.
Put a little love in your heart.
Is that how it goes?
And the world will be a better place.
Yeah, that number was so much fun. What a great way to launch into,
perfect.
Hey, we're not screwing around. We're taking out all the stops and having a ridiculous, everybody sings, the two stars are trying to figure out what is going on around them moment. It was wonderful.
You know, and it's funny because it worked so well in this episode, despite the fact that in real life, one of the things, even though I admit my first 2 years of my college degree were in musical theater, even though I have, you know, a decent amount of musical theater training, musicals frequently get on my nerves. And one of my big pet peeves is when the story stops so that everybody can sing and dance. And yeah. Then once the song is over, the story starts over again.
Sure.
As much as that drives me nuts normally, I loved that they embraced it in this moment, right? Where it's like, hey, we're in a musical. The story is going to come to a screeching halt so that we can all show off how amazing our voices are.
Yeah, and so we can say, we're in a musical. This is the tone of the episode. Buy in right now, or just click off and go watch an episode of Walking Dead, right?
And then, of course, the payoff of, you know, put a little love in your heart is really kind of Music Meister's plan.
Exactly. That's the whole theme of the episode.
Yep.
So, no, super fun, clever, and...
great staging.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
The sweeping shots, it was so much fun.
Yep, absolutely. And the other thing that it set up, again, this was, I thought, really well done, and this is where I wanted to talk about the work of Downs, the director. Because it set up the tone of the episode early on, and then that tone was so solid all the way through.
Yep.
That embracing of the sort of tongue-in-cheek craziness. This is ridiculous what's happening to us right now. But the love of it at the same time.
Yeah, right? They never mocked it. They embraced it.
Right. How many times did Barry and Kara say, things really are easier in musicals?
Oh, my gosh. I laughed out loud at, wow, it's really easy to convince people of things in musicals.
Right. And here's the thing that I liked a lot, that when we came back to the real world at the end of the episode, they kept that little nod back to what had happened.
I know.
Barry sang a song to Iris that he wrote in, what, the 18 minutes between getting out of the coma and getting back to the house? But that's the thing, that embracing and slightly otherworldly, not quite, you know, of things are a little easier with music, right? Musicals make everything better. And he pulled it back and, you know, everything's good between them at the end. That song was beautiful. So anyway, the tone, I was just so pleased with the direction, and it was set up really nicely in this opening bit.
Yes. So I want what am I doing? I want to get back.
That was awesome. What?
I know. I want to sing is what I want to do. No, I want to get back to the actual main storyline because we're jumping around all over the place a little bit.
Yeah. So then we find out that that really the owner of the club, Merlin, is a gangster.
Cutamaran. See?
Cutamaran.
I just have to Edward G. Robinson it up a little bit.
Right? And shortly after finding out that, they get confronted by two thugs who knock out Barry.
Yep. Like you do. And the person leading the thugs is none other than Martin Stein.
Right? What?
Right?
Yeah, that was fun.
Just proving to show that there are no retirement plans in the life of organized crime.
But then, of course, we find out that part of the reason he's there, after Barry wakes up, we find out that he's working with and for Jesse L. Martin.
That's right.
And they're trying to find a girl, see?
Yeah, see? The only good thing in his life, see? Yes, Joe is looking for his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Who has gone missing in Cutter Moran's place.
And, of course, like you do, the most natural thing to do is to find two completely clueless singers and have them do the dirty work for you.
Right. They're going to be the inside men, see? Yeah, see? I'm going to stop that now, I promise, for at least 5 minutes.
I was going to say, I hope not for the rest of it.
And yes, Joe West, his doppelganger, explains that his daughter is the only good thing in his rotten life.
Yes.
And asks these two new kids who are working for Cutter Moran to go back into the club and figure out where she is, because Joe and Stein can't go them their cells because they are in a mob war.
How fun that when you look at the fact that, I mean, going super deep, all of this is coming from Barry and Kara's subconscious. So here's Barry's subconscious presenting Joe going, my daughter's the most important thing in my life, and right now she's unhappy. What's that about?
Well, and one of the things that makes me so happy is this episode is obviously borrowing a lot from Guys and Dolls.
And all of the, I mean, it was, you know, we got a little West Side Barry going on.
Right. But one of the things I love about the Guys and Dolls thing is one of the songs that the next song that comes up is from Guys and Dolls.
Yep. So moving forward, what happens is they get a little help from Cisco in sort of a quick cut scene where the waiter played by Cisco gets right. to say, oh, yeah, I know where she is. She's in this little room right here. Don't tell anybody I put you there, you know. And they burst in, and, of course, they find their two significant others, current exes, in there having a little smooch.
Yep, Smoochy Magoo.
Turns out they're in love. Wow, this is a lot like so many musicals and Romeo and Juliet moments where we're in love. We can't tell our parents. See, we're just going to hide out here forever and ever. We'll be okay.
And I'm sorry, Iris's accent destroyed me with its hilariousness. The gum chewing, oh my God, my heart. She was, you know, channeling a little bit of Audrey from Little Shop of Horrors.
Right. Candace Patton was great.
Right?
In this.
You can't tell my father.
So then the two of them really pull out that, hey, it is easy to convince people in things in musicals.
Right.
They convince the two of them to go tell their parents.
Dads. Yeah. Just tell your dads. No, look, I get it. It's tense. But come on, just tell your dad.
You've made some really good points. Let's go tell them.
Wait, and they didn't. They made virtually no good points.
So then, like you said, Barry goes with Iris to go tell Joe.
And Joe and Martin.
Then it turns out that she's got two dads.
She does.
And it's Joe West and Martin Stein. That was fun.
Right. Hey, they're a cute couple.
They kind of were the husband and husband bickering, the married couple. That stuff, what do you want to do? Going to war? I had a feeling, right?
Yeah, it's so cute.
Come on, that old married couple thing that they had going was really fun.
It really was. And so, yes, along the same lines, Kara joins Mon-El as they meet Cutamaran.
Yes.
To explain the truth of the situation, which leads us to More I Cannot Wish You,
which is
a beautiful song from Guys and Dolls.
And this three-person version of it, that was just gorgeous.
I'm not saying I got goosebumps, but I got goosebumps. When all three of them started singing in harmony, oh.
Right? It was really pretty and well done and just, you know, I mean, it's a song from Guys and Dolls. It's not, throwing out some lousy hip hop pop song, right? This is a song that's been around for a while and is popular and famous for a reason.
Right. And it's, you know, not to spoil Guys and Dolls too much, but it's a song from a father to a daughter about, you know, I don't have much to offer you, so I hope you find the person you love.
Right. It was beautiful. So right after that, teams of dads, the kids leave and they go,
everything seems fine.
Everything's great. We're going to war, right? Yeah. Yeah. Let's go. Yeah.
I had a feeling.
Both of them gather the boys.
And another thing I wanted to point out too, that I never thought of it until this episode, but my goodness, the actor who plays Mon-El really could be John Barrowman's son.
Yeah, you're right. They really did look a lot alike.
They look a lot alike.
Yeah, no kidding.
Like they had their big hug moment, and I was like, oh my God. Is there some sort of genetic relation here? Because they sure look alike.
I don't know. Somebody tell us who these actors are.
I doubt there is, but my God, they look like family.
I do too. I honestly don't remember the name of the guy who plays Mon-El.
I don't either. Sorry. Chris something? Chris Wood?
Chris Mess? Chris Columbus?
Crisco?
So, Joe, we segued a little bit because we also, at this point in the episode, we go back to our Earth, right? We come back to reality for a minute. Yeah?
Yeah.
And it's when they figure out where Music Meister is, right? Caitlin says, you guys, I think he's draining their powers, because she's monitoring the vitals of Barry and Kara, who are passed out.
Yes.
And they figure out where he is. And this is when we get Wally, Sisko, and John doing their great team up to go after Music Meister.
Well, I love Sisko's moment when John offers to help. And he's like, look, I know you've got the awesome super agent thing going on, but this really requires. And then he turns into Martian Manhunter.
A green skin and a kick-ass cape. What the? Come on. And one of my favorite moments of the episode is Caitlin comes running in right after that. You guys, I think you better come look at them. Hello. That moment of her seeing John as Martian Manhunter. Hello. And she just accepts it. I guess that's happening now. Okay. And just goes on with what she's doing.
They've seen it all at this point.
That moment was so good. It was just so funny. So, yes, they team up and they decide they're going after Music Meister. And this is where I'm not sure why he's breaking into a bank. Does he really want the money?
No, I think he just there's a part of me that's like, is he just having some fun on Earth One while Barry and Kara learn their lessons?
That felt like what it was. Maybe it was to distract the team so that they didn't come up with a way to get them out of this dream state.
Right.
Right. Maybe it's that, because then he leads them on a little chase.
Right.
He shows off some of the powers that he's stolen from them or borrowed from them.
Indeed. And yeah, exactly. As Caitlin had pointed out, you know, the speed force in the Flash had diminished drastically, and the solar power in Kara had diminished drastically.
Right.
It's Kara. They keep calling her Kara. My whole life, I assumed that her name was Kara. And so I will apologize in advance if I make that mistake multiple times in this episode.
Yeah. It's Kara. But yeah. And so then they capture him, and we see the thing that I liked was Wally had the final knockout blow.
Yep.
This team up between Martian Manhunter Vibe and Kid Flash was pretty cool. With Sisko's use of breeches and things, he's been learning from Gypsy, right?
They're getting good. You know, it was a great, you know, a great modification of the high-low punch.
Right, exactly. And whether or not Music Meister let himself get caught is
he totally did.
Different story, but their strategy was sound, and it was great to see Wally get a little confidence back.
Yeah, he needed a win.
One of my other favorite quotes at this moment, Joe, ride, Wally, ride.
Oh, remember that for when he becomes Hot Pursuit.
And thanks for coming, everybody. Yes. So they get him locked up, and then we go back to the world of Dream State, right?
Yep. And all of a sudden, things are taking on a decidedly more West Side Story vibe.
Right, we're out in the street, and we get the little family versus family No way in hell my son's going to marry a daughter of yours, blah, blah, blah. And
right.
Gunfire erupts. They realize, oh, we don't have our powers, but they're out there trying to help people.
I did love that nobody referenced Romeo and Juliet. Instead, they referenced West Side Story.
Right.
Which is just Romeo and Juliet with music and some alterations.
Yeah, exactly. And so, of course, despite the fact that they're not bulletproof or super fast anymore, they're out there trying to save things in the middle of the street because they're our heroes after all.
But something does happen before then that we absolutely positively have to reference.
Uh-oh, tell me what it is.
The Super Friends song.
Oh, I skipped that.
You skipped the Super Friends song.
Oh, man.
Which was so freaking delightful, I lost my mind.
It was one of the highlights of the episode for me.
Oh, my God. When he said end ship.
Right.
End ship, Tony. That's why I had to do the easy rhyme thing. Well, it's an easy rhyme.
It's an easy rhyme. But all of the little asides in there, and again, you can sort of see, if you've seen any of Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, it bursts into these crazy things all the time like that, right? And some of those delightful little back and forths between verses, that was just so much fun.
You can go back and do it again. Ooh, I'm actually not allowed to do that anymore.
Or what was the one? I'll be there in a flash. Oh, Barry. Well, come on. That was good.
It's so meta and referential. And as much as meta, like even hearing the word usually makes me want to put my face through a window. When it works, it works, man. When it works, it works.
Right. And a bit, just their delight in doing it. I mean, that was the other thing. Watching two skilled, talented musical theater performers, or just performers, sing and dance and love doing it.
First off, their dancing was fantastic.
Oh, come on. It was great.
Barry's Superman impression, delightful.
That really was funny.
I'm Superman.
And I love that little moment with her. That was really good.
Right? Just so many amazing, funny moments. And yet also a ton of heart.
Yeah, right? That was the thing that it felt like a lot of this season has missed, is that joyfulness, the joy in the telling of these stories.
And it's funny, Tony. I don't know that I fully realized how much I'd missed it this season until this episode.
Yeah. Yeah, because when you look back, we talked about that in season one and in some season two. But that lightheartedness of the Flash as a character,
yep,
exists. And this season, some of that darkness from, you know, Arrow, I mean,
yep,
has seeped in. And so the secret keeping and, you know, the knowing that the future.
Everyone's life is worse because of time travel, and Barry's a bad superhero.
Right. Yeah. Barry, a lot of this season is Barry making stupid decisions and people paying for it.
Right.
And so this episode brought back some of that joy in the telling. And that, I hope we're going to get more of that, because that's what this show, this series, this superhero, I think, really needs.
Yeah. Well, and to some degree, it feels like Music Meister is us, right? He's a guy watching the TV show going, ooh, I don't like where this is going. Yeah. I'm going to change it.
Yeah. And it's sort of fascinating, because I wonder how much of that is the writers, as they're plotting out the season, going, yeah, you know what? We've got like 7 dark episodes in a row.
Right.
Let's switch it up. We need a breath of fresh air.
Right.
And if that was the goal, it worked.
I will say this. For the next musical episode, can we please have Grodd singing I Want to Be Like You? That would be amazing.
Just give him anything you could do, Grodd can do better.
Grodd can smash anything better than you.
Oh, so much good stuff.
And I'm just picturing him like singing telepathically, right? He doesn't move his mouth at all.
Of course. Doing a little tap number. Buildings are falling down. Grodd, no, not the soft shoe. Anyway, so I don't even know what happens next in this damn episode.
So yes, now is the moment where the gang war breaks out and Barry and Kara, jump outside to deal with everything and get shot.
Yes, they get shot. Their vitals, of course, go off the charts.
Right.
Back at, in Star Labs.
And it, jumping backwards, back in Star Labs, we've already seen that Music Meister is being held in one of the cells. Or is he?
Right, because then he just shows up.
Right, later on he just shows up.
In both of the teams, right? He shows up with Barry and Kara.
Yep.
Right? And what does he tell them? It's...
Well, what he does, they're dealing with him in Star Labs because, you know, things are going badly and they're trying to figure out how to save their friends. And they're like, we need you to unwhammy them. And he's like, it's not actually how my power works. I love so much of it's like, what power? What are you doing? He just gives them no information.
Right. That's not how it works. Yeah.
Right. And just says it's up to them to get out of it.
Yes. I did love Sisko. How the hell did you get out of that cell? Poor Sisko, all the security stuff falls on him, and then you get these like omnipotent beings who just walk out. What the
right.
Thought we so were done good. With this.
And you know, so yeah, we realize our heroes luckily realize that it's going to be up to them to save the superheroes, not for the superheroes to save them.
Right.
And so with the help of Sisko, who somehow breaches into this weird... I didn't totally get that part, but I loved it so much I just didn't care.
Yeah, because it was a pretty solid hand-wavy thing. That's why, yep. I think...
In an episode of hand-wavy things.
I think we got at least one, maybe two feedbacks discussing it, you know.
Right.
The idea that, wait, that's not even a real place. How is he going there?
Magic.
He's getting the vibration of their mental connection that the Music Meister has created via his very unclear powers.
Good vibrations.
And he vibes Mon-El and Iris into their dream state.
Just in time to watch the loves of their lives die.
But you know what? That moment was pretty beautiful.
You know, and there was this cynical part of me was like, oh, really? That's what they're going to do? But 99% of me was like, just kiss them.
Right?
Just kiss them.
I know there's a part of you that's like, too brave.
Right. Right, exactly.
We went right to Love's True Kiss from Princess Bride, right? Or,
right.
Or even Shrek, Love's True Kiss, right? But that's what it was about. That was his whole goal.
Well, and it's you know, it's a musical conceit. It's so this episode touched the old sap in me.
But man, I'll tell you what, again, Candace Patton, because that moment when Barry died.
Yeah.
Was real, real, real. And that was a heartbreaking moment. It was beautiful. And then, of course, she kisses him and Mon-El kisses Kara and the magic happens and everyone comes back to life and everything's good. And suddenly we're in Star Labs and we're all okay.
And that's when Music Meister walks in and everyone's like, wait, you were in a cell.
And he gives a little sort of explanation.
Well, and again, like, this was the moment I loved, and this was the moment also where I'm like, can someone, Sisko, just name him Plot Device, please, please. But, you know, his whole point of, like, who, they ask him who he is, and he said, I'm a guy who roots for the heroes, right? He's been watching them. He is us.
Yes.
He is the audience of the show, mm-hmm. given incredible magical powers.
Yep.
Who have been watching the show going, I don't like this season. I don't like what's going on. I'm going to magically step in and change things.
Hey, why are your lives miserable?
Right.
Stop it.
Be in love already.
And he just makes it happen and then leaves in a very, we'll probably see him again fashion.
We have to.
Right.
You know, and just hearing the, you know, put a little love in your heart as he, as it echoes, as he disappears.
Yes. I get really nice direction. Just clean, fun.
Delightful.
And so they all look at each other and trying to figure out what in the hell just happened.
Right.
But what we find out is their relationships are okay. And we'll see if that continues. You know, we hope.
I mean, better.
Mon-El and Kara have some patching up to do because he kept a secret for her for months and months and months. But, you know, I loved that in the dream state, exactly the thing that John Barrowman and that Monel and his dad, right? Whatever I'm, right. Those characters had to deal with was exactly the lesson Kara had to hear.
Yeah.
Right? That maybe he had reasons. Maybe he was trying to protect you. Maybe he was afraid of what would happen. Right? And for her to hear that and go, okay, I got to give Monel another chance. Right? And the exact same thing with Barry. He heard exactly what he needed to hear from my two dads.
That's what it was all about.
Right? It was so fun. And then we get a beautiful second proposal that comes out of love and not fear.
I'm not saying I missed it over. I'm not saying my eyes got a little wet. But maybe they did.
Maybe they did. And if they did, it's because you were paying attention and you were into it. And I think that they executed it all well.
The song was beautiful.
I mean, come on. Come running home to you. Come on.
That's the sound of my heart seizing because it was so beautiful.
Yeah. And we got a very solid yes.
Yep. That was the proposal we were waiting for.
Yeah.
The first right? Like, I think any of us would have said yes to Barry at that point.
Sure.
I would have.
So, Joe, is that it? What did we miss?
That's
it.
That's the end of the episode.
That's the whole deal.
Yep.
So, just great fun. Great fun. And I'm hoping that... again, the energy of this leads us forward for the next six episodes, because we have six episodes left now.
Well, and I'll tell you, the thing I loved about this episode, this is the word that kept coming back to me watching this episode was unapologetic.
Yep.
Right? And that's what I loved about it. You know, Tony has worked on and directed a lot of my plays. One of the things I'm a big fan of in the stuff, even the stuff I write, I'm a big fan of just going nuts and saying, this is it. This is the world. Make peace with it. Don't try to figure it out too much. Just go with it. And this episode had that all over the place. And I loved it.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a lot of fun.
Right.
And, you know, we joke all the time about the hand wavy and why is this not making sense kind of things. But when you tie it all together the way they did, that was the thing for me, was the entertainment value in there. There was nobody making stupid decisions that we just went, what? Come on. Why are we doing that? Right?
Right.
Instead, it pushed things forward in a fun way. It was entertaining. I liked this episode a ton.
Oh, it just melted my heart.
So, Joe, we got a bunch of feedback.
We did, which is exactly no surprise.
Right. I am going to start, Joe, reading some feedback, if that's okay with you.
I would love that.
I'm going to start with Christy, who has this to say. So I guess Music Meister was just as fed up as the audience was and decided to fix the idiotic relationship decisions that Kara and Barry have made recently. Yep. I thought the musical numbers were placed really well in the episode. They didn't overwhelm the episode at all. I really loved those quick little shots of Barry just gleefully staring at the singers. They still managed to give us a typical Flash fight scene with Martian Manhunter, Wally, Sisko, and the Music Meister. That was a lot of fun.
Yes.
The true love's kiss gimmick was super cheesy, but I still loved it. And wow, that ending. Grant's singing and subsequent proposal was the most beautiful ending ever on this show. I was pretty skeptical about Flash doing a musical episode, but they really delivered a stellar episode. Christy.
Couldn't agree more, Christy. And I also shared your skepticism going in.
Sure.
You know, my concern was that it was just going to be an episode where we sing and dance for no reason. And the reasoning behind it worked so well for me.
That's the thing. It's you know, I think we'd be remiss if we didn't bring up the amazing musical episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer once more with
right.
Healing, right? And one of the other reasons that that worked was because it was so driven. That episode, unlike this one, really connected to the storyline that was happening in Buffy at the moment.
Yep.
Right? This one was less connected to that, but it still had a fun, driven, in some ways, Deus Ex Machina reason to sing, right? This demon showed up and made them sing and then went away. And yep. In this one, this super being showed up and made them sing and went away. But they got their point across. And again, it delivered just a fun evening of storytelling.
Yep.
Right? Yeah, I agree. We also got some feedback from Ross. Joe, you want to read that?
I do. He goes on to say, hey guys, so Music Meister is basically Q from Star Trek. The horrific ending of the last episode was just a setup for this episode, and I guess they did something similar on Supergirl? They did. They did. On Supergirl this week, Supergirl and her boyfriend had a big fallout.
Yep.
While I definitely enjoyed the lighter tone of this episode, and the musical chops of the cast are second to none, yet another explosive plot line that has been wiped away in a single episode a la Flashpoint. Yeah, I can't argue with that.
Sure.
I guess I'll just take this episode to be a nice interlude before we dive into the meat of the story as we approach the end of the season. I give this show 7 out of 10 dads.
7 out of 10 dads? My 10 dads. Yeah, great feedback. Sure. Yeah, and it is. It was a fun but odd, like, we're taking a break from the main storyline here. We're going to do this thing and wrap it up. But again, we've talked before, these guys take risks with the storytelling sometimes, and I think that's fun that they keep doing it.
I agree completely.
Joe, we also got some feedback.
From Ms. Palindrome?
From Ms. Palindrome. Sorry, I'm coughing there.
That's all right. It happens.
So I'm going to read this.
You're reading.
I give this 9 out of 10 Super Friend dance duets. What a great episode. It's the power of love. Cute. The Music Meister was fun, and it was fun to see all the Glee alums together again. And as a Cisco fan, it was awesome to see him out in the field and kicking butt, not to mention being awesome in the dream world and singing. So cool also to see Wynn singing in there, too. I'm a big Newsies fan, and I also liked him in Smash. Caramel, Cara and Mon-El, were sweet. Is that a thing?
That's amazing.
But they seemed kind of awkward at the beginning when Mon-El was trying to define their relationship. Yeah, that was funny. We kiss a lot. Anyway, I'm glad she forgave him, but will it stick? She was dying. And the trailer for Supergirl shows a segment that's kind of contradictory. Anyway, I really liked Barry's ballad to Iris. It was sweet. They didn't know he sang, but he sang for her, and that made the second proposal that much more special. Overall, fun stuff. Cool musical world. Loved seeing the Super Friends together. Barry and Kara are so cute and awesome together. How does Barry know Merlin exactly? Arrow crossover? I think so, yes, right?
Yep, yep, yeah. Yep.
Loved hearing Joe sing. I'm also a Rent fan, so yay. Also, I'm curious, did you guys see any plot device pop-ins, or is he exempt since this is a different type of episode? Tony, you're in theater, right? How was it through your eyes? Super Friends! Love, Hannah. Yes, Miss Palindrome. Yes, Joe and I both, our careers are in the theater. And so, yeah, now you know how it was through our eyes because we've raved about it. But even if I wasn't in the theater, I have a feeling I would have loved it just because it had a great energy.
It really did. It really did. And regarding plot device pop-ins, that was just Music Meister. Music Meister was plot device.
Yeah, I think so. The only moment that felt sort of remotely like that was the Cisco being able to vibe into their dreams, where you go,
yep.
That's a new setting on plot device's Scepter of Befuddlement.
But I will say, from this point forward, when we talk about plot device, I'm picturing Darren Criss.
Yeah, absolutely. There you go. Oh, Joe, we got some more feedback. Keep reading.
Yes, we've got one from the Elfie One. She simply writes, that was delightful. The music was cheesy, the performances were great, and it was totally aware of its own silliness, going so far as to let Barry point out how easily things happen in musicals. I actually wanted more songs. I know, I totally did as well. For example, let Barry and Kara convince their dads to let their children love each other through song. It was all worth it for that final scene where they did let the song do the work in getting Iris and Barry back. Will she be wearing the ring next time we check in on the future? The scene that took my breath away. I cried through the entire thing. I don't care that the entire purpose of this episode was to get those two couples back together.
Right.
It was what I hoped for both of them anyway, and to take care of it in one fell musical swoop, well, that's fine by me. I give duet 9 out of 10 Super Friends. That has a double meaning. Joe plus Stein forever, the Elfie One. I'm glad everyone, others seem to be like, you know, Joe and, I mean, I know that they both have, you know, their respective wives or ex-wives and whatnot, but they're a cute couple.
Right.
I'm just saying.
And,
cute couple.
I did love that super friends that has a double meaning. Come on. Clever and fun. Eye-rollingly cute, right?
Totally.
great feedback, Alfie One. Thank you. Joe, we also have some feedback from Dad L, who agrees with you when he says, "Hello, super friends. We have found him. We now know what plot device looks like since we saw him masquerading as Music Meister. Think about it. He can travel between Earths. He can put our heroes in outrageous circumstances that don't make any sense. He has unexpected powers. We wouldn't understand where he's from, even if he tried to explain it. It's him." But who cares? This was so much fun. It's really refreshing to just have a fun episode. No villainous speedsters, no secret keeping other than singing ability. Just fun. And now we know the reason behind the forced drama from last week that so many of us bemoaned. I understand it now, but it probably could have been executed a little better.
Yep, yeah.
No argument here. It was also nice to get a little bit of action, complete with Martian Manhunter teaming up with Kid Flash and Vibe. That 1-2 punch combo with a breach was very cool. I was a little bit confused as to exactly what Music Meister was after during this sequence. Wasn't he robbing a bank? I give this episode 8.5. Barry was singing. Thanks, Dad L, last father of Krypton. P.S. For the Arrow Watchers, who would have thought the villain of season 1 would appear in a fantasy musical and a Flash Supergirl crossover episode 4 years later? Keep hitting the home runs, DC TV.
Oh, well, and I'll tell you, here's why, and I can't believe we forgot to mention this.
Uh-oh.
Here's, I don't know specifically what Music Meister was doing, but I know why he was doing it, why he was robbing the bank.
Okay.
Because it's one of the future headlines.
Oh, yes. How did I not even? You're right. Good job.
Yep.
Joseph, way to go. You're right.
Oh, no. Yeah, I totally forgot about it. But yeah, and I recognized it in the episode. I was like, right, they make some reference to Music Meister's Crime Wave or whatnot.
Interesting. There you go. I had forgotten that existed.
Yep. We've been seeing them kind of get ticked off one at a time.
Yeah. So, you know, so that brings up a question before we return back. Did that headline get changed then, or did it remain the same?
I don't know.
Interesting thought. Feel free to throw out ideas.
Here's what it was. I just looked it up because I couldn't remember what Music Meister's headline was, okay. And it actually didn't happen in this episode, which was Music Meister's six-figure book deal.
Oh, he had the book deal. Music Meister's six-figure book deal. How does that fit in with this episode at all, I wonder?
I don't know. But hopefully we will find out soon.
Oh, super interesting. Okay. I don't know either. All right. Very cool. Thank you.
Right?
Good work. Joe, should we do an audio?
Let's audio it up.
We have an audio from Martin the Flash.
Hello, we send feedback to you guys. Oh man, I'm definitely not qualified to be on a musical show. But anyway, guys, Martin Flash here. You know what? This Flash, he's a bit of a softie, and I can't help it. I loved that episode. It was just fun to see them all get to take a break from their regular stress and drama and just cut loose and have some fun and kind of give shout outs to their roots where the two main actors came from, Melissa and Grant. It was just fun to see them get to have a number together because from what I heard, they never actually even had a scene together on Glee. So that was pretty cool to see them. And the two of them, man, can they dance and sing and have got rhythm. You can definitely see that, that's their background. And my partner here, Patty Spivitt, she actually even said, you know what, as much as I like The Flash, that musical number really seems to suit Grant more than being a superhero. And I thought that was kind of funny. I think probably my favorite sequence was seeing Martin Stein and Joe do a duet together. And then, of course, you got Malcolm on the other end adding in a trio voice. So it was great. It was just a lot of fun.
ton of fun, and the singing was enjoyable. I am not against musicals at all, and I don't feel that this deterred from our shows in any way. It was just a fun break for them. Well done. I think it was well received, and I would not be apt to having another one of those next season.
Right.
I think the final number with Grant singing, or I should say Barry singing to Iris, was just magical and romantic. And what woman wouldn't say yes to that kind of proposal? I'm such a softie. Anyway, guys, Flash is out.
Excellent. Thank you, Martin. Yep. Great feedback. And I agree. It's funny. There are a lot of people who said, Joe, I don't want to watch this. It's a musical. I don't like musicals. And that's totally fine. People who don't like that are welcome to not like that. But I do think that the way it was executed, the way that it fit in and sort of sidestepped the main plot while moving a couple things forward, I just thought it was really well executed for what the show needed at this point.
Yep.
You know?
It had been so grim that they needed the hope and silliness to come in at freaking epic sizes.
Yeah,
and
right.
That's what we got.
Yeah, exactly. And everyone's talking about the breath of fresh air. I get it. If musicals aren't your thing and the people hated that, then there's really nothing to say, you know. I mean, I hate cucumbers, so you can make an amazing salad, but if you put cucumbers in it, I'm not going to like it. I can't help it. I can't eat them, right? So, okay, I get it. But I certainly did not find anything to turn me off of this show from this episode.
Nope, nor yeah. I.
So, great feedback, Martin the Flash. Thank you. Joe, you want to read another one?
Yes, we have one from Snoop Dogg. So good.
Snoop Dogg
has this to say. I have not watched this week's episode yet, as I wasted 41 minutes watching Supergirl. This quote-unquote crossover event was, again, false advertising. That's twice they've gotten me. Shame on me. I enjoy listening to your weekly podcasts. I'm training for a triathlon, and listening to all my favorite podcasts helps the time go by. Last week's dual episode was the perfect length for one of my workouts. Awesome. That cool. Makes me happy. While I'm exercising, a thought came to mind. I don't believe we've met the real Savitar yet. I'm starting to think that the Savitar is Barry, but maybe the Flashpoint version of himself. Didn't we see three versions of him in his house when he decided to let his mother die to restore the timeline? I can't think it's any of the speedsters we've met yet. Mm. If Savitar is Flashpoint Barry, couldn't that be considered him giving himself his own powers?
Yeah.
Right? I'm off to watch the musical version of The Flash, and at least there I'm pretty sure I'll see the crossover. Keep up the good work, guys. You help the miles go by. Thanks, Snoop Dogg.
Thanks, Snoop Dogg.
That name is hilarious.
Yeah, great points.
Yes, and that is, you know, I mean, I think a lot of us are starting to drift towards the thought that Barry is in, or that Savitar is in fact future Barry. I had not considered him being parallel universe Barry.
Right. Yeah. That's a really interesting idea. And the idea that, the Flashpoint is going to be sort of what created Savitar ultimately, I think is a very strong possibility, right?
Right.
I mean, this whole idea that Barry created his own problem, and whether he's from the future or an alternate dimension of Flashpoint or both. Yeah, you're right. That could be a very fascinating thing to see what happens out of there. That's very cool.
Yeah.
The other thing that Snoop Dogg pointed out was that there really wasn't much of a crossover moment in the Supergirl episode.
Right.
And there were some discussions happening about that with people going, why both times we've done crossovers this season has the Supergirl version of it been shafted? There's not been a lot of crossover there. And the producers have said that it really has to do with scheduling, and that because Supergirl joined the CW lineup later, right? It was that all the schedules for the shows had sort of been done and started and were going, and they just couldn't find the way to blend all four shows together the way that they often do.
Yeah.
And so the way that they can get the other three to combined. But what they said was that now that all four shows are solidly on the CW and it's one production company doing everything, that they should be able to make them all blend much more next season.
Right. Yep. Not to get all arrowy, but it's a target for them to hit.
Yeah, exactly. All arrowy. So great. Great feedback, Snoop Dogg. Joe, we got one more feedback that I'm going to read.
Do it.
From Gary. Gary says, I'm a theater guy and a former choir geek, so I was really looking forward to Duet. I love musicals and find it no more difficult to believe in a world where people break in a song than I would a world where a guy gets doused with chemicals, struck by lightning, and gets super speed. I've made comments on the CCU Facebook page appreciating the writers attempting a different approach to storytelling. However, I had no expectations that Duet would push the current narrative of either show forward. It was similar in tone to classic Star Trek episodes like The Trouble with Tribbles or Piece of the Action or I, Mud. For the most part, Duet was a funnier episode, lighter in tone than any other Flash episode this season. It allowed everyone to showcase their comic timing along with their singing and dancing skills. There were a number of good punchlines sprinkled throughout the show. Some were completely unexpected. In all of those areas, the combined DC TV cast put on a very entertaining evening of entertainment. Was it perfect? No. How could it be when the Music Meister's powers are so ill-defined? Was everything plausible? Absolutely not, especially now that we've made Cisco the Swiss Army knife of the show. Barry and Kara are in a dream state of their own making, which means there's no physical location, but somehow Cisco's able to vibe Iris and Mon-El to this place that literally doesn't exist outside of Barry and Kara's imagination. Once there, they deliver the critical kiss to their respective love interests like a Disney cartoon. Silly, silly, silly. Whatever the problems, it was enjoyable to see our heroes smiling and laughing non-ironically, especially Barry. Grant Gustin and Melissa Benoist have so much charisma together that every scene they shared was truly enjoyable. The best song of the episode was More I Cannot Wish You. Jesse L. Martin, Victor Garber, and John Barrowman showed their unique theater-trained skills to sell a song with one of the most emotionally rich scenes of the night. It also was the only tune from a Broadway show. Even given the missteps in the episode, I wouldn't mind seeing the CW make another attempt at a musical episode. Probably next time on Supergirl. Yes. Great, Gary. Excellent feedback. Really good points. Yeah, I agree. I don't know that I need to see a Flash episode that's a musical again, but one musical episode a year for the next 3 or 4 years, they got four shows. That would be fun, Joe.
This is the sound of me not disagreeing.
Perfect.
So as long as we get to see Arrow sing at some point, right?
Right? Yeah, yeah. I shot a man through the eye with an arrow.
I just wanted that's the to balance. Sing like this the whole time.
So, Joe, that brings us to the end of CCU episode 85.
Duet.
So, everybody, thank you. Excellent feedback. Thanks for being here with us. We hope you enjoyed this episode of The Flash and this episode of CCU. I'm going to encourage you to join us on our various social medias. You can follow us on Twitter at TheFlashGSM. You can follow me on Twitter at Tony Caselli. You can follow Joe by just hanging out around his house, and when he gets in his car, drive behind him. See where he goes.
Nope. Please don't do that.
You can also join us on Facebook at the Central City Underground page, where there is much hilarity, discussion, theories, and meme-making on a regular basis. And lastly, I want to remind everyone that GoldenSpiralMedia.com has a bunch of great podcasts. There are a bunch of people there who work hard to bring you some fun and entertainment. Go visit them. Check out some podcasts about your favorite shows. There's a nice wide variety. See what they've got and download some of those. And lastly, if you enjoy this podcast, do us a favor. Go to iTunes and leave a review. Joe, we did get one more review.
We sure did.
The new iTunes review we got was from Kimby73, who said, I love tuning in week after week listening to Joe and Tony give their perspective about The Flash. They make me laugh each week with their ratings like 8.5 love donuts and many other things. They point out things that make me go back and watch the show again to see what I missed. A great podcast about a great show. Thanks for making me laugh and smile each week. Kimby73, thank you for being a part of CCU and for throwing out an iTunes review there. We appreciate it. And anybody else who wants to go to iTunes and leave a review, we would appreciate that too.
Indeed. It's our pleasure.
And Joe, I'm looking forward to talking next week with you about the next episode, Abracadabra.
bringing in one of the most important and classic Flash villains of them all. I'm very excited to see how this works.
Yeah, should be a good time. So just a reminder, after that episode, everybody, feedback deadline is once again the next day, Wednesday at midnight Eastern Standard Time. So you've got the rest of the night Tuesday and all day Wednesday to get us feedback into 304-837-2278 or, of course, goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. Let us know what you think and share your thoughts with the whole CCU. Thanks for being here, you guys. We'll talk to you next week.
See you then.
Bye.
Are you a podcaster who loves creating great content but gets overwhelmed by the audio editing process? Are you a business professional or an entrepreneur that wants to start a podcast but aren't sure where to begin? You need Pro Podcast Solutions. Pro Podcast Solutions has a robust suite of services to equip podcasters and help podcasters create better content than ever before. Visit ProPodcastSolutions.com today and find out how you can get your first episode produced for free. That's ProPodcastSolutions.com.